We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with an extract from the Royal Automobile Club's February newsletter read by Susan Ray.
Ladies' locker room refurbishment. We have pleasure in informing the ladies' section that next week 10 new lockers will be installed. During this time, there will be workmen on site and some incontinence maker.
Our thanks to Sally Simon in Richmond for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Susan Kalman. Opposite them on my left, journalist Camilla Long and Bob Mills. Jeremy, whose decision not to wear the cap caused confusion?
Nigel Farage. Nigel Farage is very, very tense as the election looms, and it was their weekend spring conference. And when it's their conference, he's always on high alert to police the party because he knows that the tiniest gaffe can be a complete distraction from the cavalcade of ill-informed sociopathy on show that weekend. But he said, oh, we're not going to have any cap. And then his immigration guy said, we are going to have a cap. And then they said, but your gaffer said you're not having a cap. No, we're not having a cap. So one minute they say one thing, the next minute something else. Farage said he didn't want them all to wear a cap. And then the immigration guy said, no, they've all got to have a big pointy cap with an eye on it. And he said they've got an Australian-style point system. In Australia, they have a point system, and you can get into Australia if you have skills that they need, which is like knowing how to use a spoon or walk upright. But what happens is they have quite a strict immigration policy because the Aborigines have been quite hard on making sure that only a handful of white people can take over their country. But they don't really know what they think about anything UKIP. They are completely all over the place.
Do you think it was a bit frightening that they came up with a
policy? Thank
you,
Camilla, for stopping him. Can I just... Honest to God, I'd got to the point I was thinking about my retirement plan.
Don't you think it was a bit frightening that they came up with a policy at all?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, they haven't had a policy since the beginning, and then suddenly they came up with... I mean, it sounded coherent. I'm not sure I agreed with it, but it actually sounded like a sort of normal human being policy.
Do you not get the impression with half the UKIP candidates that actually they're just real ale enthusiasts who thought they were going for a drink with Nige and...
Yes.
UKIP seem to... I like to call it fluid policies. Ever-changing, fluid... policies. I think they are just improving. They're the first ever political improv party that Nigel Farage is leading.
I've never read a political manifesto. I know they issue them when they can. But I'm willing to bet that UKIP's each page will start with, I'll tell you something else.
Do you not think they should simplify it and just have a big billboard at Dover that says, not today, thank you.
But they don't help themselves, because one of the other stories in the news this week about UKIP, and the thing is, people say that the press are very unfair to UKIP, but the problem is that they don't help. It's like your friend that you keep saying, don't get drunk on a night out, and they keep getting drunk, and you keep saying, it's your own fault, you keep getting drunk. Like the UKIP, I don't know, was a candidate or councillor who ended up on the beach.
You're Sam Gould. You got trapped on a Margate
yes,
beach.
Because he was writing, We Love Nige in the Sand.
Did he write it with his finger? Or was he a real ale enthusiast?
I think he wrote it with his finger.
It would have been wonderful if he'd been swept off to France having written We Love Nige. There was confusion at the launch of UKIP's flagship immigration policy this week when Nigel Farage appeared to ditch the party's target of capping annual net immigration at 50,000, which had only been announced the week before. In his speech, Nigel Farage claimed that because of immigration, one new house has to be built every 7 minutes, overlooking the fact that this is why we need the immigrants in the first place. UKIP is said to have 4 seats in the bag, which also contains a tinfoil hat and a six-pack of tenants. The UKIP leader said he longed for a country at ease with itself, where our kids can play football with one another and we'll all get on, instantly outing himself as someone who has never watched a game of football. 2 points for Jeremy. Susan, have a listen to this.
From Russia with love, I fly to you.
Susan, who's been accused of whitewashing Red Square?
This is the assassination, I think it's fair to say, assassination or murder, if you would...
Be careful with what you say, okay. Susan.
It's the unfortunate accident.
He fell on
resulting
some bullets.
In death of Boris Nemtsov. He was shot, possibly accidentally, by himself.
No one likes the grass, Susan.
Yes. He was shot in the back by himself, probably, right beside the Kremlin. Now, what's very important to know at this point is that Vladimir Putin has strongly condemned this accidental death. Vladimir Putin, I think I can say this because I'm not making any allegations, is an interesting fella. He reminds me very much of Begbie in Trainspotting. There's a brilliant scene in Trainspotting where Begbie throws a pint glass over a balcony, smashes someone in the head, then walks down and goes, "Who did that?" and then starts a fight. That's Vladimir Putin.
Isn't Putin himself going to...
investigate it?
Isn't
he? Said he announced that he would investigate it himself.
It's like Charles Manson joining the Scooby Gang. I'm losing track of all the things he hasn't done. He hasn't invaded Ukraine,
that's right.
He hasn't killed Litvinenko or Nemtsov.
No, he didn't kill that woman in EastEnders that everyone was going on about for ages.
But I'm sure they'll have a very lively debate on Russia Today about this, where they have a big agree fest with four people with identical opinions who also want to live.
You never see something like that in this country, though. The Prime Minister feeling threatened by a charismatic politician called Boris. seems...
I mean, Putin, who's absolutely not responsible for any of the things that have happened, makes me that very, very clear. I have a fascination with him, with the bare-chested, bareback riding, wrestling bears thing. That it doesn't appeal to me on a sexy level, obviously. I don't think it appeals to anyone on a set. But there is a certain...
Yes, it does. Yes, go on.
You know, whenever there's, like, floods or natural disasters and you see our politicians in cagoules... And you think, oh, Putin would have had all his clothes off and be wrestling a salmon just to show how tough he is. And sometimes, and I'm not suggesting this, we are coming up to a very difficult period in political life, and but I'm not saying I want to see Nick Clegg, Ed Miliband and David Cameron and Nigel Farage bare-chested wrestling. What I would say is it would encourage more people to vote.
But you're right. We have to be very careful about what we say. I mean, I'm not saying everybody who doesn't kowtow to Putin comes to a sticky end, but I'm starting to think Boney M might want to change their public stance on who really is Russia's greatest love machine.
At least Vladimir Putin doesn't sue you. You don't have to go to court and go through all that and lose your house. It's like you don't even know you've fallen out with him.
The Kremlin has been accused of whitewashing the inquiry into the murder of former Deputy Prime Minister of Russia, Boris Nemtsov, who was shot shortly after giving an interview in which he denounced Vladimir Putin's mad, aggressive policies. The murder happened on Friday night, with a witness describing the attack as the reason I'm keeping my mouth shut. Mr. Putin said that he would personally oversee the investigation into a murder that bore all the hallmarks of a contract killing. His first task was to find the contract itself, and he thought he'd start by looking in his out tray. 2 points to Susan. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Susan have got 5 points, but so too have Camilla and Bob. We start round two with an extract from a letter sent out by the Borough Council of King's Lynn and West Norfolk.
Please note that your garden waste collection day is changing. Your last collection on a Friday will be on Thursday the 22nd. Thereafter, your fortnightly collection day will change to a Thursday and will commence on Friday the 30th.
And our thanks to Daniel Mooney in Stetisham for sending us that. Bob, who is still in mint condition?
Oh, bless her Royal Highness. They've changed her head
Majesty.
Bless her. They've changed her face on the portrait, on the coins. And it's a wonderful thing. But there must be a slight depression where just paying for a cup of coffee in Starbucks, she must just put it on the counter and think, God, I'm getting old.
Doesn't she rather famously not carry?
She doesn't carry any money.
Doesn't carry money, so wherever she goes, she's, I'm sorry, I've forgotten my purse. And they go, never mind, Liz, on the house again.
And she also thinks that your urine smells of paint.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes.
Because every time she goes anywhere, they paint the toilet. And what they've done, and I've seen it, actually, and I was a tad disappointed, because the current one, which is Ian Rank Broadley from 1998, she's very majestic. It's a very nice one. It seems to me that this new one by Jodie Clark, I hate to say this, but it looks like they've chiselled a few wrinkles on her neck and put some by her eyes.
She's 90. Mm. She must have wrinkles on
her. No, she's got a perfect... She's got the skin of a 28-year-old who went missing from the West Midlands.
Do you know, if I'd been able to help her out, I would have said bulldog clip.
At the back of the neck?
Yeah, because that's what the Hollywood film stars used to do.
But this is a side portrait. Do you not think it would show?
Sorry, I don't want to be disrespectful, because you know I'm a rabid monarchist, but you know that Prince Charles is somewhere sitting with his lady wife going, she's had new coins done.
The Royal Mint has unveiled the latest coin portrait of the Queen designed by 34-year-old Jodie Clark. Unusually in the portrait, the Queen is smiling, showing how delighted she was that her portrait was being drawn by somebody other than Rolf Harris. Her Majesty will become the longest reigning British monarch, unless, of course, she annoys Vladimir Putin. The design shows Elizabeth wearing the royal diamond diadem, which she wore for her coronation in 1953, and now mostly uses for minor royal functions, like putting out the recycling. Jeremy, who has been accused of going off the rails in their euro exchange?
Her Majesty's government and the taxpayer has gained a huge amount of money from the government selling off their stake in Eurostar, which, to me, it's just like, well, we're not going to see that money. It's like your partner coming home and saying, hey, you've had a huge cash windfall, and you're saying, where's my vinyl record collection? It's a bit like that. And, the government is basically selling off what is left of what we used to own as a country. And we just lost East Coast, which was the last bit of what used to be British Rail, was in our hands. And I was getting a train on Sunday, and men were coming around from Virgin giving out leaflets. It was like there'd been a coup, and Virgin were coming around giving out leaflets to explain the new regime and asking you to keep calm and there would be no trouble so long as you went along with privatisation. The thing is about East Coast, it was perfectly decent. It was safe, reliable and affordable, but the coffee was rubbish, which is the only criterion of privatisation of railway. It's just vastly improved. Under British Rail, there was one jar of mellow birds for the entire network, invariably stranded at crew. Now, it's amazing. And it's, you know, the thing about publicly owned railways is that they're efficient and affordable and safe, but as a retail experience, they're hopeless. Whereas now, you go to St Pancras International, it's amazing. Oh, they've got every... I found a train in there the other day. I did, behind Pret-a-Manger, honestly.
I'm always disappointed on that. I love Eurostar, but I'm always disappointed that you can get both French and English snacks the whole route. Do you not think it'd be better if there was a sort of a line halfway where they threw away the bacon sandwiches and you could only get hot chocolate in a bowl? I have quite a large desk in my office and I have a little train set that runs. And I thought I'd have it as a feminist train set, so I only have women working on the railway. They're tiny, little women working on the railway and women passengers. But you can't just buy women, so you have to buy packets of men and women. So I thought, well, what shall I do with the men? I've got a little bin of men. I feel really bad about it now. The government has announced that it's selling its 40% stake in Eurostar to an Anglo-Canadian consortium. Eurostar is a high-speed railway service connecting mainland Europe with a set of broken signals just outside St Pancras. Eurostar's first rail service left Waterloo International Station on the 14th of November 1994, shortly before Eurostar's first rail replacement bus service came to pick them up. In 1996, it was predicted that Eurostar would be carrying 21.4 million passengers a year by 2004. The actual figure was 7.3 million, although a lot were American tourists, so the weight was about the same. One of Eurostar's most popular destinations is Disneyland Paris, which is a lot like the American Disneyland, except that most of the giant animals are on the menu. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, who said, order, £3 billion worth of repairs?
Mr. Speaker of the House of Commons has said that the House of Commons essentially is not fit for purpose
in building terms any longer. They need about £3 billion, which I think is a conservative estimate, to fix it. Yes. And they may need to leave the Houses of Parliament. Now, I personally think this is a very, very, very positive thing. This could be a brilliant thing. I think the House of Commons should go on tour, much like a circus. I think they should go on tour around the country with the following provisos. One, they go on tour to all of the places that their policies will hit people the hardest, so that they have to actually go. They have to travel by public transport.
Well, like Iraq and Syria and places like that.
I was thinking about Hull, but it's the same kind of thing.
I think what they should do is start fining people for being arses in the Houses of Parliament and raise a levy for every single time they step out of line or misbehave and put it into a big pot. And they'd raise £3 billion in no time at all.
Are they not talking about having some kind of sin bin?
Yeah.
But you think it should
that
be a financial
thing? That was the inspiration
thing.
For it.
Yeah. Like a swear box.
Yes,
but like
exactly.
A braying hooray box.
Exactly.
Ah.
And so that as soon as you do something wrong, it's £100,000. They've got quite a lot of spare money, so it would be fine. You would raise the money in absolutely no time at all.
There were some extraordinary comments on this. Michael Fabricant, who's one of my favourites, he wrote in The Telegraph complaining that the Houses of Parliament were riddled with mice. Saying that at one event, giggles began at the back, followed by a shrill scream. I feared a jihadist attack. You go, yes, the famous giggling jihadists.
It is in a terrible state. You're right, £3 billion. Apparently, they've given a long list of problems, but any builder will tell you that you add to the problems. You want to up the ante all the time so you can get a big estimate. And some of the things sound a bit... For instance, they said, we've got huge problems with flooding, asbestos and fire. Well, there's three things that would sort themselves out. Basically, you don't have to worry about that. And they're talking about the QE2 conference centre, which may be a thing, but it's the ugliest piece of architecture you've ever seen in the world. It's a horrible-looking thing. And as anybody who's ever toured this country knows and goes, if you want somewhere that's accessible to everybody and has got car parking facilities and a lot of space, Watford Gap Services is absolutely perfect. And no one pays any attention to people making fools of themselves at 2 o'clock in the morning and shouting and screaming.
Do you know where it's nice? TB Services.
No,
isn't that nice?
That's spoiled TB.
Lovely scones.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's got Venice of the motorway service.
Possibly the best public toilets I've ever spent
and
a lot of time
handmade.
In. Honestly, beautiful scones.
Up in the Lake District.
Absolutely lovely.
But don't put that on wireless because we don't want ordinary people knowing.
Where is this?
It's the last one before Scotland, isn't
it? No, there's another one, but when we drive, if we're going up and down, we always plan to stop there. So we plan our day round the service station.
Oh, my God, it's like being with old people who've been on a...
your mistake
a car
there was,
journey.
Your
Shut
mistake
up.
There. Your mistake there was the word like, Sandra.
Oh.
The thing about the House of Parliament is, if you go in there and have a nosy round, as I have, it's awful Victorian tat. It's not... I mean, apart from the old bit where Cromwell burnt the spider while King Solomon was hiding the cakes in the oak tree, apart from, where the Earl of Wellington invented a sandwich by putting some meat between two rubber boots, that bit in there, the old bit, there's that bit, and all the rest of it is this awful... Not Putin, it's Pugin, isn't it?
It's
Vladimir Pugin.
It's Pugin and Charles
Barry. Vladimir Pugin, who used to wrestle flock wallpaper to show his virility. And it's this horrible sort of deep pile. I mean, the thing is, there's all this thick red wallpaper that just makes you want a vindaloo when you go in there. And it's just...
I actually think it's a clever ploy on the part of the Speaker to get his own apartments reupholstered and redone, because I actually don't think that the Houses of Parliament need redoing at all.
Oh, no, darling, the heating, the plumbing, I've been there, the heating, the plumbing, the electricity, it is all extremely antiquated. I mean, you could say that is a good thing. You want a plumbing system that matches your attitudes to ethnic diversity and women, but... The Speaker of the Commons, John Bercow, has said that the Palace of Westminster needs urgent repairs which may cost as much as £3 billion. That's £2 billion to repair it and £1 billion in consultation fees for Jack Straw and Malcolm Rifkin. The cost would scupper Tory plans for a high-speed tunnel linking the Houses of Parliament to Eton. The Palace of Westminster has been a troubled place. It was burnt down in the 19th century, bombed in the 20th century, and in the 21st century the Coalition took office. One big problem is a supposed infestation of rats in the Houses of Parliament. Vicious, greedy, detestable creatures. Politicians have plagued Parliament for years. One option being considered is moving MPs and peers out for 5 years, otherwise known as a general election. 2 points to Susan. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Susan have got 9 points, but so too have Camilla and Bob. We start round three with an advertisement spotted on eBay.
For sale, antique print of a Glasgow man on trial for murder. Framed, ready to hang.
Now, thanks to Michael Baker for sending us that. Camilla, who blames the Holy See for the holy smell?
This is a story about tramps in the Vatican, and as part of the Pope's kind of be friendly to paupers, kind of like hug a hobo sort of mission, the tramps have been given showers and free haircuts, sort of sleeping bags and things like that around St. Peter's. And this has really annoyed the tat sellers around St. Peter's, who are sort of saying there's so many tramps coming, it's really lowering the tone of the neighbourhood.
I think it's a nice thing.
It's quite, I think
it started
nice
with
too.
Belgian Willie, who was the Belgian tramp who was quite famous, who died. And the Pope had him taken to the Teutonic Cemetery, which is a huge big deal, and he was buried there. The great thing about it is that the funny thing is that what they're saying is you're attracting tramps because of your kindness, you're bringing them into showers. And the report I read that said his neighbours are complaining. If you've ever been to the Vatican, he hasn't got any neighbours.
No.
It's just him sitting in a great big house, basically.
Yeah, I don't know who these people are. No, just jumping neighbours. On the bandwagon.
To be fair, he used to be a nightclub bouncer. If anyone can deal with unwanted guests, he can. He can just throw them out later on if he wants to. I just think it's a shame. He's trying to do something nice.
Yeah.
But he's actually trying to do something nice.
Anyone would think he was some sort of Christian, wouldn't you?
I know. Yeah. He wrongfoots you because he also announced that it's a mortal sin to discard our elderly. And, of course, the elderly shouldn't be discarded. They should be put in the organic recycling box. Pope Francis has faced complaints from neighbours after his policy of offering free showers and haircuts for the poor has led to an increase of homeless people around St. Peter's Square. Neighbours also complain that he always has too many guests round on a Sunday and occasionally shouts unintelligible things off his balcony. Last week, Pope Francis allowed a homeless man to be buried in the Vatican. After he was dead, of course, he's not a monster. The homeless man, Willie Herthalier, was buried in the Teutonic Cemetery, so called because half the burial spots have been reserved with beach towels. The Pope delivered his announcements dressed in a traditional white and gold tunic, although personally I thought it was blue and black. Honestly, the Pope buries one homeless man and he's a hero. I do it, I have to come in for questioning. 2 points to Camilla. Susan, I've got a wee story for you.
Oh, have you now?
I have. Which light bulb moment isn't going down the toilet?
Oh, my. I'm just enjoying the accent. We could do this all the time.
You can call me Janet.
Wow, I'd love to call you Janet. Is this the toilet in Bristol?
Yes.
That's...
2 points. So...
They've built a toilet at the University of the West of England, I believe that's what it is, which is powered by urine.
Mm.
And now, I'm not a scientist, but I think what happens is that the urine's there and then the microbes do the thingamabob and then it's done.
No, they just have a little water wheel and you just have to aim it at
yes.
it. And it's a little turbine attached to
now,
it.
Now, the genuine reason for this is so that in refugee camps or places where there's no electricity, they're trying to find a way of finding a kind of a sustainable way of creating electricity. So they're trying to encourage the students and the staff to use this electricity-providing toilet to see whether or not it works, which I think is a marvellous idea.
I just think it's a way of them trying to find a way of making Glastonbury sustainable.
Yeah. Urine has to be channelled into the loo and then down into some receptor where microbes can turn it into energy. I think that places unreasonable expectations on the male sex. Doesn't it, really? I mean, when did this big aiming at the toilet thing come in? When did this become policy? You know, we're territorial. We're just marking out our area.
But also, Jeremy, if I know men, and I don't, so this is wild conjecture, they'd only be satisfied, I think, if the machine could convert their weed to light straight from the source.
Yeah.
They could use it as a sparkler. I don't think that...
If you wee on an electric fire, it does that.
No. You can't wee directly into the toilet, and the proof of this is this. If you don't want us to wee on the mat around it, don't make it fluffy and absorbent.
No, listen.
Exactly.
Thank you. I'm going to give an extra point. If anybody can tell me why it's peaback time in Hamburg this week.
Oh, this is a policy in Hamburg because there's too many people
weeing
against the wall on the Reeperbahn.
Well, they're tourists, aren't they? Tourists.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what they've done is they've painted the street with this sort of splashback kind of super repellent paint, so that every single time somebody wheezes on the paint, it kind of splashes.
It's an incredibly expensive version of what they use in pubs out in Dagenham. Two people have been done for it recently, which is basically two car batteries and a piece of copper wire. You stretch that across the side of your pub and no one's weeing on the wall twice.
Students and staff at the Bristol Bioenergy Centre have created a prototype toilet that uses urine to power light bulbs. The project has been jointly run with Oxfam, which hopes to use the technology in refugee camps, but who will not be accepting donations of urine at any of its shops, just in case you started saving the milk bottles. The Bristol Bioenergy Centre is part of the University of West England, or UWE for short. This invention will immediately be on an equal footing with all the other power providers in the UK because they take the piss as well. 2 points to Susan and an extra one to Camilla. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
This is from Judy Wood. The divine Anna Soubry, Defence Minister, she was speaking at Lambeth Palace to support the members of the clergy who are volunteering for the reserve forces. And she said, I think increasingly, hopefully, we will see people who will serve in both capacities, as a vicar and as a reservist, because they have masses to offer.
Sandra, this was sent in by Michael Baker, and it's a sign up in the mall maintenance shop of a shopping mall. It says, we can repair anything. Please knock hard on the door, the bell doesn't work.
Let's take a look at the final score. Camilla and Bob have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Susan with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Chester Chronicle sent in by S. Taylor.
A court has heard how a man stole soap from Northwich McDonald's. Staff called police when they noticed him making repeated visits to the toilets without spending a penny in the fast food outlet.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Susan Calvin, Camilla Long and Bob Mills. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by John Hunter, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Ed Amston and Tom Coles. The producer was Richard Morris.